The playoffs are here, and every pitch counts.
Swing in, a rocket to right, base hit, they win!
Now it's time to get to work. This is Brew October Nightly.
Jackson Chario, a trip around the bases.
The hunt for Brew October is sponsored by Delta Dental. Now here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
All right, let's hit it.
We finally have an opponent. The postseason is here, and the Brewers will face the Mets for a third time this year. Welcome in, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio with you for the next 2 hours. It's the best time of year. I'm fired up. Postseason baseball is upon us. Tomorrow night, we're roughly 20 and a half hours away as we speak live here on 620 WTMJ. We are going till 9 o'clock here on your flagship home as we preview the Brewers and the Mets. Game one coming tomorrow. Best of three series. And we'll react here at the top of the hour to that wild doubleheader today. If you watched it, you know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, man, game one might have been an all-time classic. I mean, it was practically October baseball without necessarily or exactly being postseason baseball. So the Brewers have their opponent. They know what's ahead of them. They went 5-1 against the Mets this year. Here's how the layout of the show is going to go today. The first hour of the program is going to be very audio-heavy. From everything that we gathered today at the workout day at American Family Field, and keep in mind, a lot of this audio was captured between games, you know, meaning the Mets had already clinched, but if they had won game two, then you would have seen the chance for the sweep, and it would have bounced the Braves, and the Diamondbacks would have gotten in, but that obviously did not happen. So less so about, like, the matchup, but a lot of internal sort of evaluation from the Brewers in the audio that you're going to hear upcoming. And then in the second hour of the program, the plan is to actually get into some X's and O's and see what the Brewers are going to be up against, a little bit of a tale of the tape, give you the pitching matchup as best as we know it to this point in the rotation, because really the only game we can have confirmed is game one. It'll be Freddy Peralta against Luis Severino for the Mets, and then you can imagine it would be Sean Manaea in game two for the Mets, and the Brewers are rolling with TBD for both game two and game three, and we'll talk more about that stuff on the back half of this two-hour program. And one of the phrases you're going to hear all night long is win tonight. You've heard it all season as well, because that has been the slogan from Pat Murphy and his crew to get these guys ready for postseason baseball. So we'll hear from Pat Murphy, we'll hear from Rhys Hoskins, from Freddy Peralta, from Willy Adames. We'll also get some injury updates, Sal Frelick, and also one Brian Hudson a little bit later in the program. But would love your participation as well. 855-616-1620. Once again, 855-616-1620. 1620. You can call, you can text with any questions, thoughts, comments, concerns. Again, 855-616-1620. Up next, we're going to hear from the manager, Pat Murphy, as the Brewers get ready to go against the Mets. At this point, did not know the opponent, but a lot about why the Brewers got here with 93 wins later on how it's worked out for the Brewers to be a postseason team again. So stay with us here on 620 WTMJ. All right, we know it. Brewers and Mets getting ready to go tomorrow. I'm Dominic Catronio. The entire postseason field is set. The Braves will head to San Diego. The Brewers will host the Mets. Winner of the series here would move on to face the Phillies. The winner of the series in San Diego would go on to face the Dodgers. And for those wondering, why is it a split and the Braves are the higher seed? It's because by splitting, they also take the season series head-to-head with the Mets, and that puts them in the five seed in the four seed matchup to get them ready for the postseason. So the final results have all three teams finish with 89 wins, the Braves, the Mets, and the Diamondbacks. But the fact that the Diamondbacks did not have the tiebreaker over either team. And furthermore, just one more win for Arizona, and they would have been sitting fine. And you just look back to last Sunday here in Milwaukee, them having an 8-0 lead with a chance to sweep the Brewers, and then blowing that lead, and then missing the playoffs by a game. There is going to be a sleepless night in the Valley of the Sun thinking about that game all winter long. Nonetheless, that's in the past. The Brewers know their opponent finally, and with 93 wins under their belt, the Brewers, quite frankly, have punched above their weight the entire season. And it's caught a lot of people by surprise outside of the organization. But Pat Murphy, the manager and soon-to-be NL Manager of the Year, if you ask me, saw this seed growing in spring training with the thought and with the mantra of win tonight. And he was asked today, why does it work so well? Why does win tonight continue to be the slogan that just seems to work for this young group?
Why wouldn't you want to win every game? Why wouldn't you go after that? You know, there's no certain level of intensity that's incorrect, you know, except when you don't handle, you don't respond well. So if you learn the balance of the punch and then the counterpunch, if you learn the balance of that, then you won't get too intense, or you won't put all your eggs in one bag and leave yourself exposed. But just every day come out and ready to go. Be in fight mode every day, and then worry about it the next day. You know, I think they get used to that, and it's really a statement about now. You know, today is the day. Why is today the most important day? Because it's today. There's no other day that you have. So to me, that's a mentality that I think probably every team has. We verbalized it maybe a little more, but I don't think we're anything extraordinary about our philosophies, you know, but it's simple, but it's whether or not the players, you know, take it in, swallow it, and then live it. We can say anything we want. You know, I got no retreat, no surrender, but do I live by it all the time? Probably not. You know, you got to live it.
They've been living it. I mean, the win tonight, they've added some new signage as well around the ballpark and underneath the tunnel as well. The phrases that we've heard all year long from Pat Murphy, and there are a lot of isms of Murphy-isms. Win tonight is definitely at the top of that list. You've also got Undaunted, which is the slogan for the Brewers postseason marketing campaign. And then you've also got Relentless. You've also got just Can't Coast Uphill. There are so many ones that you can keep going on and on and on about the leadership qualities that Pat Murphy has brought to this team. And a lot of folks have made the comparison to, well, he was a college coach. Of course, he's handling a young team as well as he's handled them, because this is sort of the sweet spot of ages that he's used to dealing with. Well, remember, he had an interim stint as the manager of the Padres, and he has been around big league players before, and he's been around baseball for a very long time. But he does see something about this young team and the young energy, as he calls it, as to why they've been so successful and why nobody should be surprised as to what they've done and how they've got this far.
I think there's a lot of guys that didn't know what to expect, that they were willing to make the choice to listen to the pillars in the room that were leading them. I think the pillars lived up to what they needed to, because they verbalized it. And I think the league forces you to, you know, put up or shut up. And I think they made a choice, and then they band together. And we didn't have too many sustained downs, you know what I mean? We just kept going. And, you know, a lot of it is a credit to the front office. I mean, I want to just credit that room, but then the front office provided a lot of depth and a lot of guys that were hungry. We have a lot of hungry guys, so I don't think they'll be satisfied. I think they know they have something special going on, and I don't think they'll be satisfied.
I mean, that's been the mantra all year. There's no sense in slowing down. I mean, it's go, 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 win tonight. We've known that all year. And again, the Brewers are sitting here getting to relax. Everyone was joking during game one of that doubleheader today, as watching Raisel Iglesias blow it, then watch Edwin Diaz blow it, then watch Edwin come right back. And I mean, it's very clear Edwin Diaz is not going to be available in tomorrow's game for the Mets, but they do have Luis Severino available because they gambled by winning game one. They're able to sit down their starter, which means now the Brewers get to sit back, relax, and watch. But as Murph just said, they're hungry. They don't know any better. And they're ready to play some ball tomorrow. So I think the Brewers are in a position. It now flips the switch, and you'll hear the vibe a little bit later on how Willy Adames and Rhys Hoskins and Freddy Peralta all feel. The vibe has improved this year, and we've heard Murph be very, very vocal about the fact, like, do not compare this team to last year's team. Given there was so much, I guess, unknown on whether or not they would be facing the Diamondbacks again, which obviously led to a lot of people feeling apprehensive, like, oh, wait a minute, we can't beat that team again. I mean, they just beat up on us 3 out of 4 here. Like, what are you going to do? Well, he was saying, do not, they're a different team, and the guys confirmed that. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the program. But once again, earlier in the press conference as well, I asked Pat Murphy, like, your competitiveness, and, you know, people think you're going to be manager of the year. Like, where does that competitiveness come from, and how do you get through that? And he just immediately deflects again and again and again. And he's just, it's not about me. It's about those guys in the room. There's only so much I can do. Coaches in front office, he just always is deflecting. And as somebody who's trying to get a quote out of him, darn it. But at the same time, that's who he is. He's intense. He wants winners. He's only been a winner his entire life. And this is an opportunity to keep on winning tonight. And as this team has been preached to all year long, now it really matters to win tonight, because you have to win tonight, and you have to win the next night, and you have to win the next night. Yep. You win 2 of the next 3, you're moving on. You win 3 of the next 5, you're moving on. You win 4 of the next 7, 4 of the next 7 back to back, you are moving on. It's just another, what would that be, 13 more wins? 13 more wins. What's so hard about that? 13 more wins, get the job done. This team hasn't had a 4-game losing streak all year. So if you can get yourself into the NLCS, you're going to feel pretty good about yourself if you have those odds in your favor. We mentioned it earlier, though, the Brewers are confirmed to have Freddy Peralta on the mound in Game 1. We'll hear from Freddy, his postseason experience. We'll have a tale of the tape a little bit later on and what to look out for with Freddy against the Mets. Coming up after the break a little bit later here on 620 WTMJ. Rolling along with the program, I'm Dominic Catronio. We're just getting started, y'all. Brewers, get ready for the Mets. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Hope you're joining us here live on the program. You can call in, you can text, and let's get to a couple of these now. This one is from Mike. The Brewers are where they are today because of our manager. Our manager, not the guy that left before this man, he lets them play baseball like baseball is supposed to be played. Hit and run and steal. And we got beautiful guys coming up, but they were allowed to play baseball the way that they should play baseball. Lucky to be in third place if we had the other guy. I believe deep in my heart that Pat Murphy is the reason we're here. And you just heard him kind of wax poetic about why Win Tonight works and how the Brewers have got to this point. I think the manager only can do so much, right? And sometimes folks like me in the media can't overreact in a way to what a manager's value can be. But then I sit and think back, like, you know what? How are we to know if he's better or worse? You definitely can't say it's worse because they've got 93 wins. And furthermore, you listen to all of the guys in the clubhouse and how they feel about Pat Murphy and the continuity that he delivered to this team. Not just him, but the whole coaching staff. Remember, the entire coaching staff returned for the Brewers, which is going to be a major talking point of something to monitor this offseason, making sure as many of these guys can return to the Brewers with Pat Murphy's staff. That's something to monitor, too. This one, this text from Mark in California. This one, every moment is bigger than the next in the Hunt for Brew October intro. That would imply that each moment gets progressively smaller. I don't think that's what you meant to say there. Anyway, thanks for a great season. Appreciate you. I'm 53, better learn a lot about baseball. Thank you so much. I know what it means for a pitcher to be 1-1 home. Go Brewers. Win one for you. Appreciate that one from Mark. So let's talk a little bit about Freddy Peralta here, shall we? Freddy's getting the ball game one. And then TBD for the next 2 days. We'll talk about that in the second hour of our program tonight. Freddie did sit in front of the media today, and just kind of painting the picture here for a moment. One of the moments that I kind of had a smile about is, of course, Freddie didn't pitch to his full potential last year in the game two of the wild card round. And he talks about that here in this audio I'm about to play. But, you know, he was burned by it. He was not happy about it. And he was frustrated. And he was frustrated with his middle of the season performance this year and trying to find it right. But he walks into the media room today and he sees, you know, all of a sudden, I'm just going to be honest here, there are some faces in the media room all of a sudden that you don't recognize. And it's not the usual folks like, you know, Adam McAlvey and Kurt Hoge and Todd Rosiak and Steve McGargy and Andrew Wagner and myself, you know, the regular beat crew, right? And then also you see all these cameras and you see people you've never met before. And you're like, what's going on? And Mike Vassallo, PR man of the Brewers, pulled him aside. Hey, man, it's going to get bigger and bigger the rest of the postseason, so you better embrace it. And I thought that was a pretty cool moment. But nonetheless, Freddie, this season, we know he's got the number one attached to him because of the trades and because of the injuries. But nonetheless, he knows what he's capable of. And maybe there are times that he hasn't pitched like a one. But he has had to serve that role for the Brewers. We've asked him about it all year long. And now he gets to be the one in the postseason. He started opening day. He started the first game of the second half. And now he starts the first game of the postseason. Here's what Freddie had to say about that.
Yeah. I just had to focus in my goals for the season. That it was stay healthy. As most of you guys know, I always say that. I just stay healthy, be able to get the ball like every 5 days, be on the mound. And you know, like, it really comes to your mind whenever you have two or three games in a row, like bad outings. It really comes to your mind. And he hits you a little bit, but it's part of the process. I just get to the home, get to my house, and, you know, just my kids always there. Like, you know, they change all the negative thoughts that we have in the moment. And I think that those situations, like, help me a lot because, you know, you are in that spot where you know that you are the ace and you know what you have to do and all that to keep the team in the right direction. But it really helps when you have something else like going on. Like I said, my family, guys here, they help me a lot to keep breathing fine, to keep enjoying the game. Every day, it don't matter the situations, just get ready for the next one. And then, you know, we're going to have the up and downs in the season, and I was able to do that, to get better. And at the end, you know, it was way different than probably mid of the season.
I mean, if sidebar here real quick, and I told this to Freddie the other day. If you haven't listened to the Brewers Unfiltered podcast with Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, Christian Yelich, sitting with Sophia Minter and Adam McAlvey, talking about them being the only Brewers who have endured all of the postseason runs over this great stretch of baseball for them, I would highly recommend it because how great is Freddie's English right now? Man, it really makes me smile. But the other thing that Freddie brings in is postseason experience. He's pitched in four postseason games in his career, obviously taking the loss last year, but he knows he can draw from that to get ready for this year's version.
I think it's really important to be able in the past to pitch in those games because right now, mentally, you know, already, like, feeling fine, like a normal, another star from the regular season. I think that I learned how to control those moments where we all know that the fans bring way more energy than a regular game. And I think that's the more important for me, just control myself, and that's what I learned from the past. And from last year game, I think just the only moment that I probably changed from last year was working a little guy in one inning from a team that run a lot, you know, because that can change everything in one game, especially when we are in those games. What are really important, because one run can make the difference.
Yeah, it is certainly the difference. All that matters is changing the scoreboard in the postseason. Again, we'll have more X's and O's with Freddie of what to expect for him for game one in the second hour of programming. But right now here at the bottom of the hour, we're going to get a quick news break as I kick things over to Jessica Getzo. Brewers, Mets, tomorrow. We'll be here before we know it. First pitch scheduled for 4:32. Don't forget the 2. 4:32. We'll have plenty of coverage for you all day long here on WTMJ, home of the Brewers. I will be there live. I will also have post-game coverage for you after the contest as we react to everything Brewers and Mets, the first of three. 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. This text from Doug: I would start Savali in game two. He has the hot hand, but game one is the one you have to get. It's time for Freddie to show he's a number one. Thanks, Doug. Now, quick note on the first game of these series. The winner of game one in the wild card era of these, we've now seen 8 series over the 2 years of the wild card fashion that this new format. The team who has won game one has won the series in all 8. Granted, there's only one series that has gone 3 games, and that was Mets-Padres 2022, when the Padres won in 3 games, beating Scherzer, if I'm not mistaken, in game 3. And that was the Joe Musgrove accusation of sticky stuff on the ears and Buck Showalter, and it was a Twilight Zone moment. But that's the only wild card series that has gone 3 games, and road teams win a lot. It's going to get crazy. And Rhys Hoskins talked about his wild card experience a little bit later in this audio that we're going to play. But I think a lot of fans understand the apprehension of, like, well, can they finally get out of the first round, please? Can they finally get out of the first round? And I think, as we talked about, Murph doesn't want you to compare last year's team to this year's team. But for a few of the guys that have been here before, they do feel a different energy. It's not like saying, oh yeah, they're definitely going to win the first round. But I think it's encouraging to hear that there is a different energy and something to draw upon to say, you know what, like, there might be something here. This is what Willie had to say about the vibe and getting ready for the postseason.
You know, we have a different group this year, a lot of young guys that have different energy, and you know, I feel like they've been grinding all year, and they, you know, they wanted to be in this spot right now, and you know, I can feel that the energy in the clubhouse is different than the years prior. And you know, we have Riz here, we have some guys that are going to help us that have been there, you know, and have done a great job in these moments, and you know, I feel like that's going to be big for us. I think it's just a feeling that you have in the clubhouse that it just feels different, you know, like the vibe is, it's just like a winning mentality, you know, like we gotta do what we gotta do, but we're gonna win tonight, you know. And I feel like it's been like that all year, and you know, I feel like we got to this point that now it's like we gotta win no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to do whatever it takes to win. And we're going to continue to have that mentality. And I feel like that feeling is just, it's something special.
I have to say, I mean, I know the Brewers don't wear a C on their chest for their captains. Or, like, if you could picture it like hockey, there's a head captain and then there's the assistants. Willie definitely has an A for an assistant. I would say Yelly has the C. And then Rhys Hoskins is another one that has an A, and I'd say Freddie Peralta has an A as well. We know them as the Pillars, as Pat Murphy calls them to this point in the year. Freddie Peralta had a similar answer when asked what feels different about this team as to what Willie just said, but here's Freddie's answer.
Like, what I can tell you guys is that, yeah, we feel different. I can tell even today, like, the vibes that we have right now. You can see in everybody's face that we are all, like, knowing where we are, knowing where we're going, where we want to be, is the key. You know, it's like you say, it's no pressure, but we have to think about it too. We know that we're going to face a team that is going to come with hungry to beat us, but we are here in Milwaukee. We have the advantage of that, but it's really good, like, when you are playing at home. And I think the key for us is just keep it the same way, keep the game simple, make, you know, all the plays, and just do what we've been doing the whole season, just trusting in ourselves, And just don't be afraid of making a mistake. You just be yourself.
Mistakes are going to happen. I mean, that's part of the game. But getting yourself up, the teams that have mistakes snowball are the ones that get bounced earlier than you expect in a postseason run. So Freddie knows that mistakes are going to happen. And as far as where the tone was set, I thought that one thing that was really, it's now come up a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. And it's ironic now that the Brewers are facing the Mets to start the postseason, given they started the regular season against the Mets. I mean, and literally, in the first game, we saw the slide, we saw the mad Jeff McNeil, we saw the wah face from Rhys Hoskins, and he talked about the fact that that might have ended up actually setting the tone right off the bat for the Brewers, that they knew they were going to be competitive. We heard Sal Frelick talk about that in the clinch show. We've heard Pat Murphy talk about that when the Mets came to town at the start of this series. But the fact that Rhys looks back on that series kind of saying, yeah, we're here. Don't be surprised that we're playing hard.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talk about a moment, I think, going into a hostile environment in New York on weekend one with nobody really believing in us of what we thought we could be. And coming out with three pretty emphatic wins was kind of like, okay, we can play against any team and against any environment and be all right.
I think Rhys is a guy that obviously played in the most hostile postseason environment in all of baseball, knows what it's like to, you know, be undaunted, if you will. Okay, I got to experience a Philly postseason last year working for TBS. Nothing compares to that. Nothing at all. That was, I've done a Red Sox, I've done a Fenway postseason. That's pretty electric. I've done a Yankees postseason. I've seen an Aaron Judge home run in the postseason. Those are cool. Nothing like Philly. And Rhys knowing what it takes to get through a tough opponent. That would be the next opponent for the Brewers when they go onto the DS if they win out of this wild card series. Hearing from a guy that says it set the tone and just, man, the pillars really did their job this year. That was a big takeaway, too, from Rhys Hoskins and from the rest of the veteran leaders on this team, that it's not just coaching staff. It's not just front office that set up a team for success. Players can be the biggest influences on other players, and I think Rhys is one of those guys. We've heard talking to some guys in the clubhouse today and yesterday about there was a team meeting earlier this week about the fact that, hey, young guys, you've never experienced this before. Get ready to go, right? So Rhys has played in the World Series. Willy Adames has played in the World Series. William Contreras has played in the World Series. And Pat Murphy has coached in a college World Series. You've got so many guys that have postseason experience. Christian Yelich is one game away from a World Series. Wade Miley one game away from a World Series. I mean, the list goes on of all the guys that are showing. Sal Frelick, who's got two games under his belt. Garrett Mitchell, who wasn't even active for the postseason last year. Joey Ortiz, who was not active on the postseason roster for the Orioles last year, who got bounced in two games. Or you look at Churio, 20 years young, all the guys that are going to learn what it takes to win in October. We'll talk more about that first step coming up next. More audio from Willie and from Rhys after this on 620 WTMJ. Keep it on going. We're going for another hour plus, y'all. 9 o'clock is when we're done here on WTMJ. I'm Dominic Catronio. Matt Yazel is our producer here at the studios. We're on the Avenue in the 3rd Street Market Hall. I'm Dom Catronio. Okay, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. Jenny in Vernon, best outcome today. Looking forward to seeing the series this week. Mentioning the elephant in the room last night on your show, which was the inevitable departure of Willy Adames. Now, on that note here, Jenny, we actually talked to Mark Adonasio earlier today. And I asked the question straight up, hey, do you think you're going to be competitive in this free agency market for Willy Adames? The Brewers are prepared to make an offer to him. But the way that Mark Adonasio told the story was they know that there are teams with deeper pockets. That is the reality of the world. There is already somebody with more or better or newer, whatever it may be. That's just life. And the comparison he made was when the Brewers were debating on bringing back CeCe Sabathia, and these are his words, you can believe them or not, these are Mark's words, saying, when the Brewers were trying to keep CeCe Sabathia, they were actually the first ones to offer CeCe a contract. But then the Yankees came in and upped that offer very quickly. Now, before the Brewers were even getting the chance to get back to the drawing board and up their offer again to match what the Yankees were offering, the Yankees upped their offer by another $40 million. And he just kind of warned that could happen again here. The vibe I got today was the Brewers are going to make an effort to sign him, but they're not going to be able to afford getting in a bidding war with a Los Angeles Dodgers. That's just the reality of the business. And it's up for the fans to say if that's enough or if that's okay. It's frustrating, I know, but it's the truth. It's what is ahead for the Brewers. But with all that being said, the Brewers are on a postseason run. And he did also joke that, hey, Brewers win the World Series and Willie Adames is World Series MVP. All of a sudden, there's a little more revenue in your pocket with playoff shares and postseason money and all that fun stuff. Maybe there's another play for him in hand. So if you win it all, who knows? Maybe he sticks around. But that's a good question there, Jenny. Thanks for your listenership all year long. But looking forward to the championship series since 1982 when I was a little kid. So this is the first step of that journey to the top of the mountain. Rhys Hoskins has been on that journey. I mean, he's been on some bad teams with the Phillies and then eventually got his way into the postseason with Philadelphia, and how that 2022 team with Philly, who remember were the last team into the postseason because the Brewers after the trade of Josh Hader, and in fact, heading into the ninth inning against Ryan Helsley in game one of that wild card series against the Cardinals, they only had two hits and they were down 2-0, and a rally happened.
Obviously, it's the first step, right? Like it's something that you have to accomplish before you can get to that final boss, so to say. But I think just going in hand with what Willie was saying about the vibe is that, I think that in that clubhouse, there's just so much more belief right now than there was at the beginning of the year. And that belief I think is just exuded in the confidence that we've been playing the game with. We're kind of back to square one a little bit as this tournament starts, right? Of like, we believe that we belong here. We believe that we've earned the right to be here. But now it's time to go out there and be confident enough to know that we belong beyond this wild card round, beyond this first round. I think momentum can be created. I can look back on 22 and specifically to one inning of where I feel like momentum was created for a run that we ended up going on as a team. We ended up scoring 5 or 6 runs in the ninth inning of game one of the wild card, and kind of propelled ourselves right into the next round with newfound belief that we can beat anybody at really any time. And that's like really, really powerful stuff, I think, at this time of year. So just gaining confidence, I think, from being in round number one can kind of push you on into these next rounds.
It happens in the blink of an eye when look at the Mets today, right? They're looking like, all right, well, the Braves are up ahead, and they're probably going to win this game. Then they punch right back in game one, and they were down 3-0. Then they score 6 in the top of the eighth inning. Like, oh, my gosh, they got all the momentum in the world. But then the Braves responded with 4 in the bottom of the eighth inning to take a 7-6 lead, and Raisel Iglesias was out of the game, and Pierce Johnson came in, and then their MVP, Francisco Lindor, adds to his lore, hits a 2-run go-ahead home run to send the Mets into the playoffs after all that momentum. I mean, of the 15 runs that were scored in that game one, 12 of them were in the eighth inning or later. It just takes one inning, and the whole script changes. Willie also added in about the young guys and what their message is, the veterans is, to these young guys in the clubhouse on how they get ready for October baseball and what to remember from all of this.
I would say just enjoy this moment. I mean, it's a lot of great players. I never had the opportunity to go to the postseason, you know, and you know, for them it's just to continue to enjoy and to have fun, to, you know, just don't take it for granted and just go out there and compete every day. I mean, I think that would be the best advice that I could give to them, because man, this is what we play for. This is what we play. We play to get here and to continue to, you know, go round by round and just man, don't take that for granted, because you never know when it's going to happen again. So just go out there and be the best version of yourself and just enjoy every moment of it.
Yeah, Murph kind of has spoken about just responding to whatever's kind of thrown our way. And I've kind of tried to share this throughout the year during big moments that we've had throughout the season, but like whether or not you succeed or you fail and wherever you're at during the game, I've found that the next opportunity, the next moment is already on the way, and that if you failed, that's okay, no problem. Obviously, we wish that we don't, but I think the teams that find a way to become ready for the next moment the fastest and the most consistently seem to come through in those big moments the most. And as we know, it only takes one in the postseason to kind of swing a game and to create some momentum. So just being ready for those moments whenever they're coming is something that I've tried to preach throughout the season, but I think more importantly right now.
Yeah, and then it's a great view of things for two guys that Willie reached the World Series in 2020. In fact, Willie was the final out of the World Series in 2020 when the Dodgers defeated the Rays. And Reese, he hit 6 home runs in the postseason in 2022 with the Phillies, including 4 of them in the DS against the Braves and that electric. And, of course, the Bat Slam. We all know about all that. So that's a little bit of the preview audio and the looking internal. We're going to reset here coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to get you some headlines here and then start going X's and O's in the second hour of the program. As the Brewers are ready for the Mets, we'll have a tale of the tape. We'll have some thoughts about the roster. What are the decisions looming? All that's coming up in a moment. We'll take our last break of this first hour and then come back with more after this on 620 WTMJ.
The playoffs are here and every pitch counts.
Swing and a rocket to right, base hit, they win.
Now it's time to get to work. This is Brew October Nightly.
Jackson Chario, a trip around the bases.
The hunt for Brew October is sponsored by Delta Dental. Now here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
All right, let's hit it.
Let's keep on going. We ain't done yet. We got another hour here on the program. I'm Dom Catronio, 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty. Let's get into figuring out how the heck the Brewers are going to win this series. And we'll get into the X's and O's. We'll talk about the bullpen. We'll talk about the starting rotation. We'll talk about the lineup and all of that sort of thing. The questions that loom as the Brewers try to figure out what they need to solve in the next, I don't know, 12 hours or so. I didn't get confirmation. I believe the postseason roster is due 10 a.m. Central tomorrow for both teams, and we'll know more then. Reminder, quick refresher on roster rules. You go back to a 26-man roster, and you can only have a maximum of 13 pitchers. You still are going to have a bigger bullpen because you only need to activate, in theory, 3 starters. And the Brewers, we know Freddie Peralta is going to be one of the starters. We assume Tobias Myers, Frankie Montas, Aaron Civale are going to be involved in some capacity, but we'll see how many of them are actually active. There are a couple names that we'll talk about in the pitching segment who I think would be a surprise if they're on the roster, and some guys that maybe you have forgotten about that could be on the roster too. So how many pitchers and how many of them are starters is one of the first questions that we'll all be asking. Another one is, how many players on your bench because of how many pitchers you have? So let's say you use all 13 pitchers. You can still only have a 4-man bench like you normally would in the regular season. How does Tyler Black fit into this? How does Sal Frelick fit into this? How does, you know, do you carry all 3 catchers, Gary and Eric? And that means if you carry Gary Sanchez and Eric Haas, that means you can only have 2 more guys off your bench. Does Andre Monasterio make the team? Does Isaac Collins make the team? That sort of thing are all on the docket for the crew. Another question is going to be, who's going to be your first man out of the bullpen? You know, is there a situation, let's say in the 5th inning, right? Freddie's in trouble and he's getting ready to face a 3rd time through the order. I mean, every game matters. You got to win tonight. Do you go straight to Yoel Piamps? Do you go straight to Aaron Ashby? Who's the first guy out of the bullpen, or what are the questions I have? And then finally, will anybody being left off the roster in this first round make an impact later in the series or in the postseason? And here's why I bring that up. I had a conversation with Joe Ross yesterday in the clubhouse, and he reminded me something that I did not know about Joe Ross's postseason run in the World Series in 2019 with the Nationals. Joe said he was not on the roster for the wild card game. He was not on the roster for the DS. In fact, he wasn't even on the roster for the CS. It wasn't until the World Series was he finally added to the roster to be active for the World Series. He did pitch in a game out of relief, trying to mop up some innings, and then all of a sudden he gets a call the morning of Game 5. Hey, man, Max can't go. You got to start Game 5. And I know he took the loss in that game. The Nats only scored one run in that game. But he gave Max the chance to reset, refresh, and be ready to start Game 7, which, of course, they ultimately won. And Ross has got a shiny ring for it. So who's going to be the Joe Ross of the Brewers in 2024 if they make it to a 2024 World Series? Somebody that's not on the roster, or at least not on the projected roster right now, to get them to the promised land. Those are a few questions that we'll talk about. We'll talk about X Factor. We'll talk about things that the Brewers do well, maybe better than other teams. And we'll also have a tale of the tape coming up a little bit later, too. But up next, one of the main stories that everybody wanted to talk about today was the return of Brian Hudson. He is on the field. He was warming up. He did PFPs with everybody. He did all the minutiae. He's back with the Brewers, and we caught up with him for a few minutes as of members of the media today at the workout. You'll hear that audio coming up next here on 620 WTMJ. This text made me chuckle. Did WTMJ come up with the hunt for Brew October from the movie The Hunt of Red October? You're a smart one, you. Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. I didn't come up with the name, guys. This was here before I arrived, The Hunt for Brew October, so Don't look at me. But thanks to our friends at Delta Dental for sponsoring all of our postseason coverage here in October. We're a few hours away from October. Brian Hudson, he has had an incredible season for the Brewers, but some folks were very confused, including myself, when he was optioned to AAA Nashville at the beginning of September. There was some data that indicated, hey, wait a minute, his velo is down, he's been getting hit a little bit, they're not chasing as much as they used to. What's going on with Brian Hudson? But still, on the overall year, I mean, these are video game numbers. 62 and a third innings, just 12 earned runs. That's a 1.73 ERA. And in those 62 innings, 62 strikeouts, and better yet, only 17 walks for Brian Hudson. And the big pitch is his sweeping slider. And how important that pitch is, given the fact that he doesn't throw hard. He sits 90 to 92, but when he was starting to show signs of fatigue from the workload that he had in the first month of the season, folks were starting to get a little worried about not only the shape of his breaking ball, but the velocity of all of his pitches. At the start of the year, his average four-seamer was 91.8, his average cutter was 87, and then his slider was 82. So essentially a five-mile-an-hour gap between all three pitches of 92, 87, and 82. But then you look to September, and I know he only pitched in a couple of games in September, but the fastball was down 3 miles an hour to 89, the cutter was down 2 miles an hour to 85, and the sweeper was all the way down to 78. That's 4 miles an hour down. And that may not sound super significant, but remember, we're talking about a game of inches here. We're talking about the comfort and the hesitation of hitting in the big leagues. And every millisecond counts. And if you're not as effective as you were earlier in the year, teams are going to catch on to that. And the Brewers had 1 month to get it right. And as opposed to having him get it right at the big league level, they sent him to AAA Nashville in a low-stress environment, knowing when he was going to pitch, no back-to-backs, get himself right. And there were some questions, and there was some frustration, not only from Brian Hudson, but from maybe some guys on the team. I remember Devin Williams said so even after the Brewers clinched a postseason spot. He flat-out said, there are some guys that were a big part of the postseason push that should be here right now, including Huddy, Brian Hudson should be here right now. So he had to miss out on the celebration. But he actually told a funny story that he went and got a six-pack, enjoyed it to himself when the night that the Brewers clinched and got himself ready to be on this roster in October. So in his own words now, Brian Hudson back with the crew, chatting with us on the media earlier today.
Just how do you feel physically at this point?
Good? Yeah, really good. Ready to go.
How's the stuff compared to, like, obviously, you know, they told us everything that they probably told you about the stuff not being where it was earlier.
Yeah.
Where do you think it is right now?
I think it's back where it needs to be. You know, velo's down on a little bit of everything, and I think we worked on some things down there, and we got back right, so ready to go.
Was it a routine thing, or was it just sort of an end-of-season drag that got you out of sorts?
I think it was just a long season. You know, my body's not used to this kind of, like, the amount of innings I'm throwing at the pace I was throwing them. And I think it just kind of caught up to me, and, you know, that's something to go off of for next year. So I'm not in this position again, but, yeah, I think it's the rest was the biggest key right there.
How did you approach it? Were they scripted? Did you, like, know when you were going to pitch?
Yeah, so I knew when I was going to throw, and it was just kind of, we built workout programs, throwing programs, kind of all around me, how I feel, and like what I want to accomplish out of that stint down there. So,
Brent, how do you take that news? I mean, like, your numbers were what they were. You had still been producing, even, you know, with the World Halo and whatnot.
Yeah.
Month left in the year. How do you take that?
I mean, it's one of those things, you know, being a younger guy, you just kind of take it with a grain of salt and move on, right? There's not much I can control. I've, you know, controlled what I can control as far as baseball. And those kind of cards just get dealt, right? It's not the best situation, but you just go through it, right? Keep on going and just keep supporting the boys, right? I was watching every game from AAA and rooting like I was right there with them. But, yeah, just kind of go through it and then get rid of it, right? Don't try to think about it or sit on it too much. It stinks, but it's over now, so.
Go ahead.
Did they tell you yet? Like, you're in, you're going to do? And
No, we're kind of waiting on, depending on who we're playing. So, depending on who we play and these kind of games today and that kind of stuff is going to decide that. So, still no word yet.
How important would it be for you to get back on the mound?
Oh, it'd be awesome. I mean, that's what I've been working this whole time for, and obviously that's what we've all worked for this whole year. So, be big, and if I get that opportunity, I'll be ready.
Did you lean on anybody dealing with the adversity of, like, all right, I don't want to be down here? Were the guys that helped you sort of, like, hey, keep plugging along, you could be here in October?
Yeah, I mean, the coaching staff, the staff of the Brewers in general, and then also guys down here, you know, they were reaching out and just kind of being very supportive, and just as far as the staff and that kind of stuff goes, they were all very understanding and very, you know, willing to help in any regard. So it is what it is, but I'm happy for it, you know. All things happen for a reason.
Ryan, given how well you pitched, like, the numbers speak for themselves this year, and the performance was there, as I don't know if the word is described, but a bit like, is there some, like, questions, like, perplexing a bit that, like, you still don't know if you're going to be helping this team in the playoffs? How do you do that?
Like I said, it's just one of those things. I kind of roll with it. I don't try to think too much about that. I do what I can on the field, and then all those other decisions will kind of figure themselves out, right? I just roll with the punches and make sure I'm taking care of my stuff out here.
Our thanks to Brian Hudson for sitting down and hanging out with us for a little bit today and just kind of getting his perspective on the whole situation of what went wrong there in August and now here. Now, two numbers I want to keep an eye on for Brian Hudson. Things to remember. Of his 43 outings in the big leagues this year, 24 of them, so more than half, have been multi-inning appearances, meaning he finishes an inning, goes and sits down, waits for the half inning, then comes back. That defines a multi-inning appearance, not necessarily completing three or more outs. Nonetheless, he has done that plenty this season. And the other number two, I got two more numbers here. Inherited runners, he inherited 21 runners this year. Only three of them scored, which indicates to me he might be the role that is the fireman. That, hey, you are the first guy out of the bullpen because you can get up at a moment's notice, get a guy down, and then the Brewers know, hey, we can send you back out too. And that's where having him available will be so huge. And the last note on this, now that the Brewers know they're facing the Mets, and I know they're a very right-handed team. They have Francisco Lindor, who is a switch hitter. They've got Jesse Winker on the bench, who hasn't played in the last few days. And then you've still got, you know, Brandon Nimmo, who is left-handed. And then there isn't much lefty pop on the Mets. So maybe the traditional platoon doesn't factor in well, not so much, because righties against Hudson this year only hit 143. Granted, there were six homers of the 20 hits that he allowed this year, but still 41 strikeouts in 140 plate appearances. Again, 41 strikeouts in 140 plate appearances against off-handed, against righties. That's a 30% strikeout rate. So here's a guy that I think quite frankly, if he's not on the playoff roster, there's something he's not telling the truth about, the Brewers aren't telling the truth about, because this dude needs to be on the playoff roster for the Brewers to be successful, in my opinion. Another guy that has his status up in the air right now is Sal Frelick. We also talked to him. We'll play that audio coming up next. And then we'll have a tale of the tape a little bit later on. What are your concerns about the Mets? What are you worried about if the Brewers are facing the Mets with some adversity? As it'll be Luis Severino versus Freddie Peralta. At least it's scheduled to be tomorrow at 4:30 as we get ready for postseason baseball. We're going till 9 o'clock here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Brewers, get ready to go for playoff baseball. I'm Dom Petronio. Sal Frelick, how's he going to be? Not placed on the injured list, as we explained over the weekend. You don't need to place him on the injured list, because if you do, he wouldn't be back until the CS. So if his condition improves like it seems to have to this point, maybe you don't use him for the wild card series, but it sounds like if the Brewers move on, he could be available for the division series. But Sal, we saw him running on the warning track. We saw him fielding fly balls. We saw him running the bases. We did not see him swing on the field. He said he swung in the batting cage. More on that in a moment. But the healing process from the contusion that he suffered on Friday night here against the Mets to now suddenly being on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I rode the crutches yesterday and was kind of just walking around was definitely more bearable. So I think then when I saw that progress, I was like, okay, maybe one more sleep will keep going. So when I woke up this morning, it was obviously a little better. And I think the training staff's doing a great job of throwing the kitchen sink at it. So it's kind of a combination of that.
Sal also, you know, some folks may not believe it, he's actually been swinging the bat pretty well here at the end of the season, so to have this stunt his momentum is certainly pretty frustrating for his sake. I mean, in this last stretch, going back to the Diamondback series, he's hitting .318. That's 7 for his last 22, and that's not a very big sample size, but 3 doubles in there, only 3 strikeouts. And here in the month of September, he's not a home run hitter. We know that, but the way that he finds success is being a pest and getting on base and 14 hits this month. It's only a .203 batting average, which is certainly alarming to this point in the year. So for Sal, I think the Brewers have made it to this point where it's like, yeah, sure, Sal could be a factor in this outfield for the Brewers in the wild card round, but could he be a factor at less than 100%, which he clearly is? There is concern about the fact that, you know, he still does have a small limp when walking. Pat Murphy said as such earlier today. What else gets affected in his swing? In fact, he thinks not much.
Yeah, I swung when I got to the field. That was not really as much of the concern. It's more just like a twist thing. It's kind of more just weight-bearing and pushing and striding and misdirection, like stop and starts, which is really what I think they were most concerned about, seeing if I could handle it. And kind of went out here today and checked all those boxes, I think.
I wonder about a guy like Sal sliding, right? I think he's more of a head-first slide kind of guy, so you don't worry about the guy going feet-first. But what happens when sometimes you need to slide feet-first, or if you're trying to make a play defensively to shock somebody? Is he able to have full range of motion? And maybe another day of healing would help him out. But he understands that today was about going through these tests and proving that he's capable of playing. And he knows he has a high pain tolerance, and he also knows that the decision is out of his hands, and he just wanted to make himself available if they wanted him for this week.
Obviously, no. I mean, there's obviously a point where this isn't, you know, about me. This isn't about me playing, being selfish. I don't think I'd put myself out there if I thought that it was going to hurt the team, if I thought I couldn't make a play, couldn't, you know, steal a base, stuff like that. So I'm comfortable saying that I can. I can go out and play like I have the whole year. But again, I wouldn't put myself out there if I didn't think that was the case.
For Sal, you look at the outfield picture right now. Let's say Sal's not on the roster. Churio is in left. Perkins is in center. Mitchell is in right. But then your backup outfielder is Jake Bowers. And I know in the playoffs, your bench isn't as big of a priority, especially given a team like the Brewers that has a pretty set-in-stone outfield, and with one less factor with Sal, it makes things maybe a little less flexible, given Sal can't handle left-handed pitching, given the Brewers are probably going to face a left-hander in Game 2 on Wednesday with Sean Manaea. That hasn't been confirmed yet, by the way. But Garrett Mitchell has barely played against lefties. He has had recent success against lefties, but I wonder how he's going to do in that regard. And then you do have to have Murphy's Law available. Well, everything that could go wrong can go wrong. What if somebody has to come out of the game and you move Jake Bowers to the outfield? And mind you, one thing I think with Bowers that the Brewers are thinking is he's probably not going to start as the designated hitter in the playoffs. This is me speculating. Because, A, they need him as a defensive replacement at first base. And now, B, they might need him as a defensive replacement in the outfield if something goes wrong with somebody out there. They have to be removed from the game. I think the Brewers' optimum defense includes a 100% Sal Frelick, but it doesn't get drastically worse if Garrett Mitchell is in right field. Keep that in mind. I know Sal leads all National League outfielders in defensive runs saved, regardless of position, mind you. The Brewers are going to have to prepare for the worst if they don't have Sal. But again, it kind of comes back to the fact, well, if Sal is going to start on Wednesday against Sean Manaea, and he's going to be less than 100%, like, is it worth it? You're still going to have to start another lefty against Manaea in Mitchell. That's what they're weighing right now. How much are they able to live with, and how hurt is Sal? It goes back to the old adage, are you hurt or are you injured? And I think that the Brewers are aware that Sal is just hurt right now. He is not injured. And you would hope it only gets better from here. I'm shocked that he's running right now, quite frankly, given the way that he came off the field the other day and what we saw in the clubhouse on Saturday morning. But he's a fighter, man, and you know all the cliches of being a hockey player, yada, yada. But, man, that was some nasty hit that he took last weekend, and maybe he'll be available for postseason play. Up next, we're going to talk about the tail of the tape. Let's measure things up between the Brewers and the Mets and what to look out for in this one. X-Factor's coming up a little bit later. Who is your X-Factor? 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. You can call, you can text. Going for another 30 minutes here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. All right, let's get into it now. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. I've got a question out there. Who's going to be your X Factor? Just your thoughts, comments, concerns. You're welcome to call in. You're welcome to text in. We'll get to some of these in a little bit. Now, let's just go down the list here. Some stats that I wrote down that are key stats for the tail of the tape comparing these two teams. And it made me realize just how similar these two teams are. And I think it's fair to say that the Mets were in transition year all along, but they're being carried by an MVP-type performance this season from Francisco Lindor. And again, the stuff of legends today, hitting a go-ahead two-run homer in the top of the ninth inning to get your team to the postseason. He finishes the year playing at 152 games. He would have probably played all 162 if it wasn't for the back that flared up in these final 2 weeks. 273 batting average, a 500 slugging right on the dot as an everyday shortstop. That equates out to an 844 OPS, 33 homers, 29 stolen bases, almost back-to-back 30-30 seasons. Again, the back might have robbed that from him. But what a year for Francisco Lindor. It all starts and ends with containing Lindor at the top or in the two spot of the order, depending on what Carlos Mendoza wants to do with him. But overall, runs per game, the Brewers and the Mets are right there, side by side, in the top seven in baseball. The Mets at 4.75, the Brewers at 4.80, number seven and number six, respectively, on the season in runs per game. What about ERA? What about their pitching staffs? Well, the Brewers have a top five pitching staff in baseball just by ERA. Not a perfect stat, but a 3.65 ERA for the Brewers, whereas it's about a third of a run more for the Mets at 3.94. That's middle of the pack, 14th. And I want to remind you, while it may sound like a massive difference between rankings on some of these stats, at the end of the day, it's a third of a run, which let's say it's a third of a run difference, a one-run game in all of these games. All of a sudden, you know, that's a series win for the Brewers, and it's such a small margin for error this time of year. And in case you're wondering, in one-run games, including today's one-run win for the Mets over the Braves, the Mets improved their one-run record to a kind of crazy 28-16 this year. That sounds like some prime Brewers numbers. And that has not been the Brewers' strength this year, one-run games. They've been fine. They've played a lot of them. They're 28-25 in one-run games this year. But technically, the Mets, of course, have the advantage of how they performed in those one-run games. But the Brewers have played more such contests. Some other numbers that jump out to me. Runners in scoring position. What's your batting average with runners in scoring position? Both of these teams are top 10 teams. The Brewers at 268 for their batting average. That's fifth best. The Mets at 264. That's ninth best. The Brewers steal bases. We know that. More on that in a moment. The Brewers had the second most stolen bases in baseball this year. And a reminder, they were not caught once stealing against the Mets in the season series this year. And I know they got shut out in the last game, but it didn't really matter. The Brewers were just kind of sleepwalking, making sure nobody got hurt on the last day of the season. But 17 for 17 in stolen bases, that is going to be one of the key factors of this series. The Mets don't run all that much, mostly Lindor. 104 total stolen bases, that's 17th in baseball. The thing that really jumps out to me is going to be a major key to this one is bullpen. The Brewers are going to have a fresh bullpen, obviously. Granted, the Mets have a healthy and ready-to-go Severino and then a normal rest Sean Manaea, the likely starter for Game 2. Two guys that can give you length, and they can avoid their bullpen for a day. And then you look at tomorrow for the Mets kind of look at tomorrow as looking at their offense because they're not going to have Edwin Diaz available, having him pitch in three consecutive days. And then furthermore, if the Brewers are out in front, they're definitely not going to pitch Diaz or any of their leverage arms, just kind of fight to be ready for games 2 and 3 if they can make a comeback if the Brewers do win game 1. So the Brewers, I look at the pressure sort of being on them because of the depleted bullpen that the Mets have, and they may force Severino to go a little bit longer than they maybe are accustomed to, given the fact that they need him. They don't have the ninth inning covered. They have exposed Maton quite a bit over the last couple of days. Ottavino has not been himself. Stanek's been good for them, but how confident are they in Severino potentially a third time through against this Brewers team? That's going to be something really important to watch, really just in game one. If they can give Diaz, if they can give Maton a day, then you're back to a little bit more of an even split coming into game two and to game three. But back to the base running for a moment. Rhys Hoskins and Willy Adames, he had a joke at the end of this clip, talking about, you know, what's a facet of the game? This question was from Sophia Minter. What's a facet of the game that the Brewers excel at that they feel is going to continue to excel in the postseason that is going to be a major reason why they're able to potentially have a deep run in October? And it was a consensus agreement what they do on the bases.
It's not a surprise to anybody about what we can do on the bases and what that type of game can do to an opponent. It just kind of throws everything out of whack. There's a pretty, I think, easy, low-hanging fruit comparison to last year's D-backs team. And by no means am I saying just because of that that we're going to go on a run like they did, but there's definitely similarities there in the type of team that we are to how they were last year. We just make teams uncomfortable. And when we're on the base pass, gaining confidence, stealing bases, pushing the envelope a little bit. That just helps the confidence, I think, of the rest of the team. Guys on the mound, because they know we're going to score runs. They don't have to be perfect. There's a freedom there. And then in turn, in the box, because we know that the guys on the mound are going to keep us in the game, there's freedom that comes from that, too. So just continuing to push that chaos, I think, is definitely something that we can leverage into helping us win some games here.
Yeah, I think that would be the key. So, yeah. You're
going to run?
Well, I do.
Anybody can. Yeah, that's the beauty
of it. I feel like, yeah, this team, like, you can't be surprised, you know. Even, like, risk could go, you know, at some point. Like, you know, like, you never know. And I think that's why we were so good during, you know, during the whole season, because we're just aggressive. You know, that win mentality, it's just, you know, you got to do what you got to do to get to the next base, you know, and like, then it's the same mentality when you're hitting. Okay, I'm going to move the runner to third, or like, you know, just playing the small ball. And it was great. I mean, we did a great job.
Willy Adames and Rhys Hoskins earlier today talking about what they can do stealing bases to make things a little bit more difficult on the Mets in this opening series. So we'll get to X Factors coming up next. A couple of texts I've rolled in here about that. 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. And then we'll give you some final roster thoughts before we say goodnight here at the top of the hour. Brewer October. Whew. Can't believe it, man. Postseason baseball, nothing like it. Hope to see you at the ballpark tomorrow. There are still a few tickets available. They released another batch of tickets earlier this afternoon, so if you didn't get in the first time, give another shot. Hopefully we'll see you rocking American Family Field. By the way, it should be a beautiful day for baseball tomorrow. Maybe the roof will even be open. It should be a fun time here in Milwaukee. All right, X Factors coming up next on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. We're wrapping things up here soon. Talking about what we are thinking, who will be the guy that surprises you? Is the X Factor? What are going to be the guy's roles, and who's going to be most important to this team if they're going to win this first-round matchup with the New York Mets? A couple of texts here that I've rolled in here. This one from the 608 area code, my X Factor is Joey Ortiz. He's been hot and has to continue it. He's been okay. I think he's found his floor in this second half. It's obviously not been the same second half as it was in the first half for Tito. But one of the things that the Ortiz has gone through this month, he's just simply swinging the bat more, right? And he's somebody that the Brewers know can work a walk. He struck out 19 times here in the month of September, and that's in 26 games. That's still a pretty good rate in just about 85 plate appearances. So that's, 20 goes into 84 times, so 25%. That's a little worse than league average, but he's still learning how to be a big leaguer. But he did have 10 extra base hits this month, which is far better than what we can say he did in the month of August, given that was kind of the real root of his struggles. He only had 8 extra base hits that month, but with a few more strikeouts. He had 27 strikeouts that month, so he's found some pop. And he's found some things going. I like that pick as well. This one from 847 area code, it's Jackson Chourio. Veterans who have been there are usually more valuable in the playoffs, but I think Chourio proves his worth. You know, Reese talked about a funny thing. Adam McAlvey had a great question for him today to Reese. Like, hey, some of these guys had known about Chourio a little bit. He had come and hit batting practice. He had come, been in spring training 2 years ago, and he'd been trying to figure out, you know, is this kid going to be the future? And some guys had heard a lot about Chourio. Reese came in totally blind, right? Thinking about, hey, is this going to be, you know, a kid that's legit? Or is he going to get sent down? And then Reese told a story of how he felt he's a real deal. But part of the reason he thinks Chourio knows he's the real deal, but it's confidence, it's swagger, it's not arrogance, it's just belief in his doing. And again, Kurt Hoge of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had a great piece asking around the clubhouse, when did you realize all of this was legit from Jackson Chourio? I would really encourage you to read that. And Ozzie Timmons retold a story in that when Chourio was really at the height of his slump in the end of May, early June, that after a tough game at the plate, he went 0-for at the start of June. He asked Ozzie, can you come to the cage with me? I want to just swing. And nothing mechanical. Everything was just swing, swing, whack, whack, whack. He said, all right, I'm good. Nothing mechanical, nothing to work on, or swing anything. Next day, 3-run homer, it was June 2nd. And that was the day that everything turned for Jackson Chourio. So I would really encourage you to read that story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A couple of good picks there. I got two picks for you that I'm keeping an eye on as to what the Brewers are going to need. And I'll have one pitcher and I'll have one hitter. Number one, the pitcher is Yoel Piamps. I said this in yesterday's show with Jerry Augustine, but the pitcher is Yoel Piamps because the fact that he's got a one, barely over one ERA over the last, 2.5 months since the All-Star break? Incredible. The slider's been great. He can get lefties out too, which is going to be very important for the crew. And he's healthy. The velo's there, 95, 96. They had a little forearm tightness that they were worried about in Arizona, but that seems to have gone by the wayside. He is going to be very, very important because you look at this bullpen of what the Brewers roll out there, he could be really the only versatile righty that can be coming into a game at any moment, right? McGill is more of like a clean inning. He gets the eighth. Devin Williams obviously has the ninth. Joe Ross could get a situational righty, but I think they look to him having to get a little bit of length out of Joe Ross. And then TBD if Nick Mears makes the postseason roster. Another guy that was revealed that is here working out, not necessarily being placed on the roster, Elvis Piguero is here and around and staying sharp now. I don't think he's going to get any leverage innings if he's on a postseason roster. Also, Rob Zastrzyzny is here and healthy and ready to pitch. He's been on the 60-day IL for a while now, but he is eligible to come off. So those are a couple of names to remember. But for me, it's Yoel Piamps as the pitching side of things as my X factor. And then on the hitting side of things, a guy that I can't believe I've made it this far to not say his name. It's William Contreras. We haven't talked about William in the slightest, and he had the day off yesterday, and what an incredible year for William when you zoom out here. A .281 batting average, just a little worse than last year. A .365 on base, virtually the same. A .466 slug, that slightly improved. An .831 OPS, that improved. A .129 OPS plus, that improved. He had 23 homers, that's a career high. 37 doubles, one shy of last year's total. He also drew, and this is the reason why he's my X factor, a career-high 78 walks, and it was the best walk rate of his career, despite playing more. And here in September, and now getting into October, as we've said all month long and all year long, when we say meet the game halfway, can you make sure that you hand the bat to the guy next? And I know his batting average was down to .257 this month, but his on-base was up to .385, which was one of his best months of the season, thanks in part to 16 walks this month, keeping him fresh and getting him ready to go for October. So those are my two X factors, Yoel Piamps and William Contreras. And another one here from the 847. Given the Mets' one-run game advantage, I got to think Devin Williams is another X factor. Atlanta, at least one of these games is probably going to come down to the wire. At least one of these, that was typo. At least one of these games is going to come down to the wire. I agree. I mean, that's postseason baseball. Every single batter matters. Brewers, get ready to go. We'll have one last roster projection, what I think it's going to look like, and maybe we'll be wrong. We'll probably be wrong, quite frankly, and we'll know sometime tomorrow morning. 4:30 is the first pitch coming up tomorrow. Brewers and Mets postseason baseball has arrived here in the good land. Take our last break of the night after this on 620 WTMJ. All right, last few minutes here of the show. Let's get to the crux of it, right? Well, who's on the roster, Dom? What do you think's going to happen? I'm not going to go through the whole roster, but let me get to the gist of this here. I think the Brewers are going to carry all 13 pitchers that they're allowed to carry because of the little bit of uncertainty that their roster decision could give somebody scouting them. For instance, here are the 8 players that I feel are locks on this pitching staff, specifically in the bullpen. Okay, Devin Williams, duh. Yoel Piamps, duh. Trevor McGill, Jared Koenig, Aaron Ashby, DL Hall, Brian Hudson, I think he should be a lock, and Joe Ross. So that's 8 guys out of the 13. Well, you got to have 3 starters. So I think we know Freddy Peralta, that's one. I think we're going to see Aaron Civale, 2. I think we're going to see Frankie Montas, 3. So that leaves you with 11 pitchers. Well, what if you put Tobias Myers on this roster? Okay, so you got one room for one more spot, and that's going to go to, I think, to Nick Mears. Since you're facing the Mets, a right-handed heavy team, he could get, you know, if a guy goes short for some reason, maybe he comes in and gets you a couple of outs here to end an inning, and Mears, maybe you're trailing and you don't want to use one of your leverage arms. Mears can be that guy too, and he's going to be on your team next year, so you might as well use him. And you have room for all 13 players and try to figure out how do you mix things up. I put 4 technical starters on here because of the fact that Tobias may not be used as a traditional starter. Let's say they're in a game 3, right? And they've already started Civale and Frankie or something like that. Or they've used Frankie out of the bullpen, or maybe they go to extras or something like that. And you can use an opener in front of Tobias. He comes out of the bullpen just like he did on Saturday night, gives you a couple of innings, and he's ready to go. I think that's a real possibility for the Brewers and keeping them versatile. This team doesn't like to make decisions until they absolutely have to. That's been their MO their entire, you know, existence, really, since Matt Arnold and David Stearns took over of this baseball operation. So that's my look on the pitching side of things. Do I think Sal Frelick's going to be active on the roster? I know Sal wants to. I don't think he will be. There's too much uncertain there. Is he going to be ready to go? Might as well get him ready for the DS. And there was a question here. When, if the Brewers move on from the wild card, when is the DS? It would start on Saturday in Philadelphia. So let's say you sweep the Mets, you win tomorrow, and you win on Wednesday. You get off Thursday, off Friday, resume play Saturday. Saturday, Sunday in Philly, off next Monday, back home next Tuesday to get ready for the DS. But that's getting ahead of ourselves, trying to see if the Brewers can finally win one. So tomorrow's pitching matchup is scheduled to be Luis Severino and Freddie Peralta. And then game two is TBD for the Brewers and scheduled, and this is reported, Sean Manaea, and then TBD for both teams in an if-necessary game three. Real quick reminder on postseason rules. You get two challenges in the postseason. You can still request a crew chief review after the seventh inning. And also, if the game goes to extra innings in the postseason, we're playing regular ball, folks. No placed runner on second base in the postseason if you're in extras. Does not matter how long it takes. We're playing regular baseball. I mean, Brewers fans certainly know about that back from 2018. So that's just a quick little refresher on what's to come. The Brewers can change their roster between rounds. You have to file a waiver and get approval from the league if you need to put somebody on the injured list during a series if something changes in that regard. So there's some little minor things that change when it comes to the rules of the postseason. Exhale. We did it. 2 hours of content. Thanks to everybody that helped us out at American Family Field today, the PR staffs of Andrew Grumman and Mike Vassallo, getting us all the guys that we wanted to talk to. My thanks to them, and can't wait for a long October run with them. And to Matt Yazel, our producer, I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.